This is Packer and Durham on ACCM and SiriusXM Channel 371.
We start this 9 o'clock hour, though, Roddy, with Alan Saunders of Pittsburgh Sports Now, who yesterday was the guy to break the story about Paris Ford opting out of the remaining four ball games in the Panthers football season. And Alan, good enough to join us this morning from Pittsburgh. We appreciate the time. Welcome to the show. Great to have you with us. This was surprising news. Now, we knew Jalen Twyman had opted out before the season started. Roddy mentioned this, Andre Sisco, and had opted out after being injured for the remainder of the year. But a guy with the impact of Ford, Alan, this caught a lot of people by surprise. What led up to it, do you think?
Yeah, it's not something that, I mean, I can say I was really expecting myself. I mean, we had started to talk, you know, just as a group at the website, Pittsburgh Sports Now, you know, hey, is this something that we should look into maybe happening? And, but even if you'd asked me Sunday afternoon, this wasn't something on my radar. But I do think it's something that Paris Ford has been deeply thinking about for a long time now. Pat Narduzzi referenced yesterday at his press conference that Paris actually took 2 days out of training camp in August and walked away from the team for a minute. Wasn't sure whether he wanted to play this season. And so I think this is something that in his head has been going on for a while, but I don't think it was at the forefront of anyone's thinking with Pitt 7 games into its season.
Well, Alan, you mentioned the fact that Pat Narduzzi said that Paris had taken some time off in camp. Do you feel like it caught the people in that building off guard, especially with some of the tempers flaring that we saw in the last game between he and the coaching staff?
I don't know. Paris is a fiery, passionate guy. He kind of wears his emotions on his sleeves, on the field, off the field. He kind of is exactly what he shows you all the time. I think that's why he's such an exciting player to watch. I think that, you know, I don't know. You see guys get into heated things on the sidelines, and that's sports sometimes. I don't know that has anything to do with this decision, but I do think that all along Pitt had known that this was something that Paris had deeply considered both in the offseason and right before the season. But I'm not sure how much the Pitt coaches saw this coming as Pitt entered its bye week.
It's interesting, Alan, because when you start to think about the timing of this, Kenny Pickett, by all accounts, at least from what we know right now, probably will not play Saturday at Florida State based on at least kind of the speculation that's out there. There is, I guess, some sense that he's back at practice. So not only is your offensive leader, the emotional leader of your offense, not going to be there, at least for what we know, clearly now the emotional leader of the defense is not going to be there. So in some respect, are the Panthers having to find new guys to fill those roles for the remainder of the regular season?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's actually, I mean, listen, Paris Ford is an outstanding player. He's going to go play in the NFL. Certainly he's probably going to be a very high draft pick. Pitt's got some guys that can play safety. They're actually pretty excited about Brandon Hill, a redshirt freshman out of Florida, who's going to take that spot. And I'm not saying he's going to be the same kind of player as Paris Ford, but he's still a player that Pitt coaches are excited about. I think it's the other stuff that really is what's going to be keeping the Pitt coaches up at night this week. And you lose 4 games in a row. You don't have your starting quarterback. You know, your emotional leader on defense and one of the best players on the whole team opts out. That's a bunch of mental blows in a row, and I wonder how that is going to impact the team on the field this Saturday.
So, Alan, you talked about the mental blows, and as those dominoes continue to fall, they start to affect other guys on the team. Is there any indication whether some of these other guys on this defense that are big-time NFL prospects, think of a Patrick Jones or a Rashad Weaver who's already had a big injury in his career, is there any indication that those guys are thinking about doing something similar and maybe sitting out some portion of the rest of the season?
I haven't gotten that indication from anyone, and Pat Narduzzi said yesterday he wasn't expecting anyone else to opt out. I think the one guy you really wonder about is Kenny Pickett. And, you know, it's one thing to play during a pandemic. It's another thing to play through a busted ankle. And, you know, I wonder if he will come back this season. I know Pat Narduzzi is always tight-lipped about injuries in general, but, you know, if there's a guy that I would say, you know, really wondering right now if he's going to come back, that would be the guy.
All right. Alan Saunders of Pittsburgh Sports Now with us here on Packer and Durham. Alan, I want to dive into, you know, beyond, I guess, the injury to Pickett, and it's a wait and see every week, and that's fine. I totally understand it. The opt out of Paris Ford to, you know, look, Roddy and I were there for the win against NC State, the loss to NC State, but the win against Louisville. Two different dynamics in play, almost in back-to-back weeks. What do you think has triggered this slide from a team that everybody had such high expectations for?
Yeah, it's never one thing, but I think the offense has been very disappointing. I think when you look at having a senior quarterback and they lost, you know, the games to North Carolina State and to Boston College, mostly with Kenny Pickett. When you have a senior quarterback and you have coming back in the second year with Mark Whipple as the offensive coordinator, I think there was a lot of hope that this offense was going to take a step forward. It was not particularly good last season, but I think a lot of people thought that, you know, they got into new weapons with the Jordan Addison at wide receiver. It just hasn't come together. They haven't been able to run the ball at all. They haven't been great at pass protection. And the receivers, they dropped a ton of passes last year. They have a ton of drops again this year. It's just not clicking. It's not working at any level. And then I think the defense, they've been good, but they haven't been the dominant kind of world-beating defense that we thought they could be when you saw the players that were coming back. They've taken too many penalties, and they've allowed too many big plays. I feel like every week you look at the defense and you're like, well, if you take away one or two plays, that's a dominant performance. But they've allowed those big plays, and they've been big plays that have really hurt them. They lose two games by 1 point. Anytime you do that, it's, you know, every play counts, and I think that's really what's happened to them.
Yeah. Well, Alan, when you look at this game coming up at Florida State, Pitt's got left at Florida State, at Georgia Tech, then Virginia Tech and at Clemson. So those last two games, obviously, Virginia Tech and at Clemson, are really tough, and they are looming. How big does that make a game, the next two games, at Florida State, at Georgia Tech, in terms of how this season goes?
Absolutely huge. You know, you're sitting right now 3-4, that's not where any of these guys want to be. But if you finish this season winning three of the last four, and it's a whole different feeling going into this offseason. And I think that really hinges on this game because, you know, talking about those mental blows that they've been taking, a couple one-point losses, get embarrassed by Notre Dame, then you lose this game, and all of a sudden you're looking at being an underdog the whole rest of the way. Two of the last three on the road, Clemson and Virginia Tech involved, and maybe finishing the regular season on an 8-game losing streak in the cards at that point, and that's not what anybody wants. And so I think this game at Florida State is huge. If they win this game, I still think they can salvage some positives from this season. It's still not going to be what anybody wanted coming in, but there will be some things that they can take away, some good feelings. If they lose this one, I think it starts to look pretty bleak.
All right, Alan, real quick here. Joey Yellen gets the start. Supposedly, if Pickett can't play, I'm going to guess Joey Yellen starts for a third time on Saturday in Tallahassee. What do you think they've learned from his first two starts? Because, hey, let's be honest now, you're staring into the future a little bit here, at least from an availability standpoint with Yellen at the control.
Yeah, Joey Yellen's a talented player. He was, I think, he was the number 9 rated pro-style quarterback coming out of high school. He's got a good arm. He can throw. What we saw against Notre Dame, I think, was a combination of an inexperienced quarterback not necessarily doing the best job of reading defenses, and also he's not the world's most mobile guy, and the Pitt offensive line did not give him clean pockets all the time, and I think things really started to break down for him when he had to move in the pocket or move out of the pocket, and I think that's something that kind of Pitt has been spoiled by Kenny Pickett's athleticism over the years, where he was never bothered by having to step up or having to slide and still be able to make plays. Joey Yellen's a different kind of player. They're going to need to come up with a way to utilize his strengths better. I think the off week came at a really good time for that, and that they can kind of take a look at the offense and see, hey, some of this we might have to throw out because it's not going to work for a quarterback that can't run. Pickett has also been basically their best running back this year. I mean, when they've needed a yard, it's been him. When they've needed a big gain, it's been him sometimes too. So they've got to find a way to get that running game going and take some of the pressure off a redshirt freshman quarterback.
Alan, I want to ask you about the run game as well, because really in the entire Mark Whipple era at Pitt, they haven't been able to run the football with any sort of consistency. What's your level of concern long term with this team and their ability to rush the ball, and where does that lie? Is it the backs? Is it the offensive line? Where do you put the blame on this one?
Yeah, it's very concerning, and I think going forward, it might be the number one concern, honestly. Listen, it's, you know, 2020 college football is a pass based offense for the most part, but you still have to be able to run the ball. You have to be able to get in good down and distance. You have to be able to convert short yardage when you get it. You have to be able to in the red zone. Running is super important, and Pitt has not been able to do it now for a year and a half pretty consistently, and it doesn't seem to matter who plays at running back. They've changed guys on the offensive line from last season to this season. That hasn't seemed to make much of a difference. I don't know that there's a secret sauce there that they can just flip a switch and turn things on, but they've got to find a way to block it better, for one, certainly. And then, you know, I think they have a real crisis of personnel, because I think they think Vincent Davis is their best running back. But Vincent Davis is a little guy, and he's not going to be a guy that's going to break tackles. And, you know, they have to block at least to the line of scrimmage to get him going forward, and then maybe he can make some guys miss. If he's getting contacted in the backfield, he's going nowhere. And so I think they have to decide whether are they going to be able to block it well enough that they can play Vincent Davis, or do they maybe need to go to a bigger guy and just say, hey, 3 yards is our ceiling running the ball, but we still need those 3 yards sometimes. Let's pound it and get them.
All right. Alan Saunders covers Pittsburgh football and basketball for Pittsburgh Sports Now. You can read his work there. Alan, thanks for the time. Appreciate you joining us, and look forward to chatting soon.
Thanks, Wes.
All right, Alan Saunders. Interesting.
That's
times.
A little head start on game prep there, Wes.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we're ahead. We're working in front. good time for the production meeting later this morning. Here's the idea, Roddy. When you think about this, and Mark mentioned this a month or two back, guys, and I'm going to use Paris Ford as the example here, because remember now, we talked about teams having to go through what they go through just to be able to play, right? And then the games themselves. And not the preparation, but the testing and the protocols and the safety and all that stuff. So Paris Ford opts out. And the team concept aside here, are we in trouble in college football? And I'm not talking about ACC Pittsburgh exclusively here, but this is a talented guy. This is a guy who's an All-America type player who's more than likely going to be drafted first, maybe second day. All right? But do we have to worry about guys maybe cashing out the last month of the season here if, in fact, hey, look, our team's going to struggle. We're not going to make – I mean, you wonder about the fight Monday through Friday to get to the fight on Saturday, I think.
Yeah, especially this year, this is not the last guy that we're going to see. And to be clear, Paris Ford says that it's over concerns of COVID rising cases in the Pittsburgh area.
Sure.
There is a factor, like if this team was 5-2, would he be making this decision? I don't think so. I think it's hard to imagine that he would in that case. So I do feel like that when we, especially this year, this is not the last time we're going to see it. And then going forward, does it continue? Like next year, are we going to see guys do this as well? And my inclination, maybe this is a little cynical, but my inclination is yes. You're going to start to see top guys decide to opt out over the course of the season when they feel like they've put enough on film, when they feel like there's nothing left to play for with that team, much in the same way that you've seen guys opt out of bowl games. And I think, you know, the bowl game conversation to me is a little bit different, but it is a possibility that it's going to start to creep forward. My question is, does it creep forward to even before a junior season potentially? Because we've seen a number of these guys opt out there. And like, yes, there are COVID concerns, but at the same time, the fact that we have had it this year, it just opens up the door to having it in future years for guys like a Trevor Lawrence type player, a Penei Sewell type player, a Micah Parsons type player across the country. So I don't know. I think it's certainly a legitimate fear. We won't get the answers for that in the near term, but it's something that we definitely have to worry about.
All right, sit tight. Good stuff with Roddy and more to come. Mike Golic Jr., bottom of the hour. But when we come back, a second helping of conference cuts? Oh, yeah, right here on a Tuesday. You bet. Scott Satterfield will join us in this one. Jeff Hafley, good-looking Zoom. Oh, Dave Clawson up close. And more. Dave Dorn as well. Wolfpack off a bye week. Sit tight. More coming up.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. It's a Tuesday. Roddy Jones is here today for Pack on show 251. Mark is back tomorrow. Yes, well done. You get A-plus work today. By the way,
that.
Do we have any indication?
What were you going to say?
Go ahead.
This is kind of like Saturdays where you just carry me through to the finish line.
Stop it. Do we have any indication JC and Adri are up and watching the show yet, your 3 and 2-year-old daughters?
They without a doubt are up. Whether or not they're watching the show, I don't know. You know, they kind of go in and out. There's a couple things they do love, though. They love it when you say Power Hour. They absolutely love that. And they love the Jordan Cornette, the huddle commercial, when Jordan Cornette comes on and says ACC football is here. They love that. I mean, they are all over that. They'll wake up and say that in the morning sometimes, which makes my heart just proud. So, girls, if you're up, JC, Adri, if you're up, hi. I'll see you guys later today.
Nice. Well done. All right, time for conference cuts. JC and Adri, I hope you like conference cuts because we've got them. Let's start in Louisville with Scott Satterfield as his team gets ready to go to Virginia. But he's talking about today being a day off and the importance of Election Day to his football team.
What we did throughout the summer and as we're headed toward the season, you know, what we made an aim to get everybody registered. We got our 100% of our guys registered to vote, you know, and then we got everybody that was out of state. We got all their absentee vote ballots here that came straight to our office here. So we were able to hand them to our guys here. And then obviously the local guys, you know, the polls have been open, you know, now I think we're in 3 weeks here in Kentucky. So these guys have had opportunity to go out and vote. You know, the actual number have voted. I don't know the number, but I know there are a few guys that are going to vote tomorrow, the local guys. So, you know, tomorrow these guys will be free. They won't be over here. They'll be free to go, you know, handle that voting opportunity if for a few guys that need to do that. Like I said, the majority of our guys have already done that. And have already, you know, voted this year.
Again, just another statement, Roddy, by this conference on the value and its message, especially igniting what I think is the 18 to 30-year-old demographic, which is really important in this process today. And they've decided to take a major role in it.
Yeah, and these are skills that you acquire in college that are going to last you a lifetime. You know, the simple act of registering to vote, doing it at this young age, getting invested in the process, that's something that has not been emphasized on campuses across the country. It's just something that's kind of been taken advantage of, and young people and football players. I mean, I was in a locker room not too long ago. Certainly it was a different time then with social media and all the excitement around elections. But there were a lot of guys in that locker room in the first time I ever voted in 2008, there were a lot of guys in that locker room that did not. And that was another election where it was historic. So I am, again, so proud to be involved in this conference at this time that it's been a leader in terms of going out and pushing these initiatives to help guys understand the power of their voice and their civic duty to go out and vote.
Yep. Changing gears here. Yesterday during Manny Diaz's press conference, there was some concern brought up about whether or not Miami would be ready to go Friday night in Raleigh against NC State in a game you'll see with Jason Benetti and Andre Ware over on ESPN in an ACC contest, as both teams had bye weeks last week. There was a tweet put out regarding a Manny Diaz quote in the presser basically saying, we hope we have enough guys to get on a plane Thursday to go to North Carolina to play the game on Friday. And it came from Tom DeAngelo. And Diaz said, we're going to try like heck to have a football team we can stick on a plane to go to Raleigh on Thursday to go play on Friday. Well, needless to say, Dave Doran of NC State had to address that in his press availability yesterday.
You know, I mean, the protocol is in place where we're testing 3 days a week and particularly testing on Friday before they leave, protect us in that. So, I don't know, going into our seventh game now, I don't feel, you know, nervous. It's something you deal with every week, and we deal with it here. I think we're all under the system of trusting our health care and knowing that the tests that are in place protect us all, and not just players, staff. You know, I mean, we're all in this thing together.
Okay, just to be clear here, with a Friday game, now, we don't have this confirmed. I would assume we're looking at a Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday testing protocol for both these schools leading up to the Friday game. That would just be the conventional thinking, Roddy, based on the Friday to the Saturday, because as we spoke of earlier, Louisville was notified on Saturday morning of a list of unavailable players for their ball game against Virginia Tech. Therefore, I'm guessing we're looking at a Sunday testing period, a Tuesday testing, which would mean today, I guess, right? Even with the election and the mandatory day off, my thinking is there has to be some degree of testing, and then another one on Thursday with the results potentially coming later that day, maybe Friday morning. I'm not sure quite how this is going to work, to be honest with you, given the mandatory day off on Tuesday plus the game being Friday.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to work either. The thing that I do know is that, you know, as most people have read this year or seen this year, the first two tests of the week are the tests that are administered by the school. Those are school-sponsored tests that they are doing. The last one is the ACC's test. That's the one that the ACC goes to the ACC's laboratories. All the schools send it off to the same place. And so the ACC is going to make sure that they're tested the day before the game. I don't know what they're going to do during the week. I don't know if they're going to require them to get tested today, whether it was maybe a Saturday-Monday thing, and then they'll get tested again on Thursday. I don't know. But I think Dave Doran is completely right. If it's not safe to play, they're not going to play. And with the testing protocols that they have, you have to trust the process, trust the system. Although I will say, the last time we heard something like this from a head coach, with sort of the unease on whether or not his team is going to have a full complement of players, it was Justin Fuente, and we found out that, you know, basically his entire defense and defensive coordinator was out. So I am curious to see how this turns out at Miami, because Manny Diaz is not inspiring confidence with his statements.
All right, more to come on that story for sure as the week moves on. Let's quickly move to Chestnut Hill. Jeff Hafley, off the disappointing loss at Clemson, has a 2 o'clock game. He talks about the difference in playing at 2.
Yeah, it's at 2, though. Kevin, I've never played it. I don't think I've ever played a 2 o'clock kickoff, like whether I was playing in like Pop Warner or in the NFL. I've never heard of a 2 o'clock kickoff. So I think maybe Rich was the one who decided that kickoff time. But an early game, yeah, being on the road, I didn't even think about it like that. But we had to adjust the schedule a little bit. What time we're going to wake up? When are we going to eat the two meals? Because it's kind of an odd time. We'll make the most of it, and we're just appreciative we're still playing football right now.
There you go. That's right. That's the attitude, Coach.
I'm a big meal guy. Like, the meals got to be. You got to know when you're getting your meals. And the meal becomes a big issue here, Wes. I mean, a big issue. Think about this, okay? So for a noon game, you're getting breakfast in. Breakfast comes at normal time. You get a little snack before the game. You go and you play, okay? But this is a real thing. When a 3 o'clock game, you get breakfast and lunch, all right? So for a 2 o'clock game, what are you gonna do? You're going to go light breakfast and a heavy brunch to get you through? Like, maybe that's what Boston College does. Maybe it's like a 10:30, 11 a.m. brunch that they're going with. Because it's too early to go with a real lunch. it's too late to just roll off breakfast. Like, are you gonna go? You're gonna go heavy breakfast, small snack. Are you gonna go light breakfast, big brunch? You can't go lunch. You can't do it. That's out of the question. Now, 2 hours before the game, can't be eating food. You're gonna feel heavy. You're gonna feel lethargic. I'm telling you, this is a big deal. We need to talk more about this. 2 o'clock games mess up the entire meal schedule.
Who knew, kids? Who knew? All right, quick reminder. The ACC Field Hockey Tournament starts this week. I had no idea. We'll be at Karen Shelton Stadium in Chapel Hill for our coverage right here on ACC Network, by the way. Full coverage of the ACC Field Hockey Championship starts on Thursday with a triple header, 2 o'clock, 4:30, and 7. The semifinals are Friday at 1:30 and 4. And Sunday's championship is at noon. All matches are right here on the ACC Network and the ESPN app. Who in the world knew about the meal predicament in college football? When we come back, boys and girls, gather everybody around the television. Mike Golic Jr. and Roddy Jones. They've put the band back together again. And Roddy's going to discuss why his alma mater looked like Purdue on Saturday playing Notre Dame, and DJ Uiagalelei after this.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham, Tuesday edition. It's election day, and I hope you're taking advantage of your constitutional right, or if you haven't already. Wherever you may be dialing us up, we appreciate it as well. Live on SiriusXM, ACC 371, and of course here on the ACC Network. Roddy Jones filling in for Pack. All right, boys and girls, the next few minutes here, we're putting a band back together because it used to be like Anish Shroff, Mike Golic Jr., and Roddy Jones. Wasn't that basically the trio that this company decided it would be good to put them on the road? Isn't that right? That's basically what an expense account was. Look at Golic's already laughing at this. By the way, is this your first appearance on our show, Golic? It is, isn't it?
This is, and that's why I got all dressed up for you guys. I wanted to be real professional, real ready to go for you.
It's really nice you stole Johnny Lujack's satin vest coat, by the way. I mean, whatever that is.
It is.
Where'd you get that?
It's beautiful. It's soft. Listen, it's game week. I got to pull out all the stops so we can go Johnny Lujack. You mentioned Vegas Ferguson off air. I'm channeling all of the greats of old, busting out all the stops for Clemson week right now, fellas.
Roddy, you and Golic take over. I'll sit right here.
No, well, for the first question right is that a jacket that's been handed down through the generations, or is that just a throwback? Because that could be a jacket that's been touched by Rudy for all I know. Like, is there any luck in that thing?
There might not be any luck at it. Actually, I have to give a nod to the much maligned Notre Dame alternate jerseys that they wore when they played Syracuse in Yankee Stadium. This a little bit of nod to the baseball life that we lived there with the pinstripe jerseys that everybody hated so much. So I have to remind people that that happened. It was real, and I was somehow in support of it.
Very good. Well, I do want to get Wes. We'll let you back in this, but I do want Mike to back me up here on what we were talking about in the last segment with the food. Like, Boston College has got a 2 p.m. kick here, and Mike said that he had to go early or go light on food early. But I think we've settled on the fact that you cannot go. You really have to pay attention to how you pace yourself before this 2 o'clock game with the food, Mike. 2 o'clock game. What are you going with? You going breakfast, brunch? How are you pacing yourself?
I'm going breakfast on this one, Roddy, and I'm generally a guy who believes breakfast can exist in most meal times of the day, but you're right. It's got to be light, and it's all about timing. We're creatures of habit, all right? We're not rocket scientists. We're not reinventing the wheel out of here. We are creatures of habit, and so I need to be eating relatively the same thing, relatively the same time away from kickoff, because I'm already a nervous creature. I'm already someone who is prone to losing my lunch before games, and so I needed to make sure I was giving myself the best shot possible to not do that in a way that would offend too many people.
That's fair.
All right, well, we don't want to offend our audience either by talking about you and your food intake at this point, or its possible rejection before a kick either. So Mike Golic Jr. with us, of course. Afternoon Drive radio star, Shanae and Golic, now on ESPN Radio every afternoon for your ride home. and available on podcast too, as I understand. So there we have it. Notre Dame and Clemson is a 7:30 game Saturday night, Notre Dame Stadium, South Bend, Indiana. First of all, do you expect alternate jerseys of some form or fashion for the Irish? Green, perhaps, making an appearance on Saturday night.
I don't, and I'm glad for it. I like the idea that Brian Kelly and this staff have been very open about circling this game on the calendar. They've said they understand where they are as a program. They've got to start winning these big games and these big time matchups. And so I think they're going to acknowledge that in the way they prepare, but not in the way that they dress. We like to save the greens now for more winnable games on the schedule. We have learned and made that mistake too many times in the past against Southern Cal. We're not here to make it against Clemson.
I think it's a good call there. You treat it like any other game. I do want to ask you about the fact that Trevor's obviously not playing on the other side. And there's been some talk that this makes it kind of a lose-lose situation for Notre Dame. If you win the game, you win it because Trevor didn't play. If you lose the game, you lost to a Trevorless Clemson team. What's your take on Trevor not playing's impact on what it means for Notre Dame?
Yeah, listen, I wanted Trevor to play in this game. I think college football is better when Trevor Lawrence is on the football field, period, end of sentence. And this game deserves a player of that caliber, and it's still getting one. DJ Uiagalelei is an incredible football player. We just saw him throw for 350 yards in a comeback win. He's good. So we're going to miss Trevor on Saturday, there's no doubt. But I think for Notre Dame, this is more about a standard game. They've so far through this season not had to play four quarters of complete football in the way that I know Brian Kelly and the staff are searching for. Clemson is going to be an opponent that is going to play, force them to play four quarters of their best football if they're going to want to win this game. And so I don't think it's a lose-lose situation for Notre Dame. I think if you go out and execute up to a standard that you want to set and continue to establish as this program is now in double-digit seasons under Brian Kelly, I think winning this game is a big start, regardless of who's under center, regardless of if it's their first-round pick that's going to go in this draft this spring or the first-round pick we're going to see in a couple of years when DJ's in the draft.
All right, 22 straight at home. Ian Book is the most successful quarterback from a stats perspective, maybe since since Brady Quinn at Notre Dame. You look at kind of where this Notre Dame team is. Defensively, they're outstanding. Offensively, not saying they're one-dimensional, Mike, but we haven't seen a lot of vertical balls being thrown by the Irish so far yet.
No, we haven't, with the exception of a couple of big shots to Ben Skoranek in that game against Pitt that we all saw. It's been a largely underneath offense. And guys, I look at this game and I say, all year long, we've been asking Notre Dame to develop a downfield passing game and be that. I say, why not build off what Boston College just did? You're a big team with great big skill players. Kyron Williams at running back. Michael Mayer, the stud freshman tight end in that offensive line. Let's be big this game. You can work those bodies into meaningful passing lanes. We saw the middle of the field can be open for business against Clemson. You've got to protect and maximize those big weapons. And then in this chess match against Brent Venables, the ultimate defensive mastermind in college football, you've got to make them pay when some of those galaxy brain blitzes come your way. I think Tommy Reese is an excellent play caller when it comes to screens and underneath action in their offense. And I think they're going to have to use that in timely fashion against Clemson. So instead of maybe focusing on going deep in all the ways people want with offensive skill, I say go big and go in the middle with the guys that you've got already known commodities in big key positions.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I want to talk about the defense for a second, because I think this Notre Dame defense is probably the most underrated, maybe the most overlooked unit in the entire conference this year. Part of that's because we don't really know what to do with Notre Dame in this conference as a full-time member. But the other part of it may be who they've played, and it's easy to discard what's gone on the defensive side of the football. This is going to be the longest, fastest, most physical defense that Clemson has played. What's your confidence level that Notre Dame will be able to stop Clemson consistently with what they've shown, and what's the key to that?
I think the key to that is going to continue to be really two players that on the Notre Dame defense move at a different speed than everybody else. It's their linebacker, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa, and their safety, Kyle Hamilton. Those are day one NFL draft picks that are going to have the task. We've talked so much, guys, about DJ stepping in at quarterback. the two-time ACC Offensive Player of the Year is in that backfield. Travis Etienne is the key to this offense. For Clemson, they want to volley. They want to hit the things underneath that they need to score big plays with Travis, whether as it's a pass catcher or in the running game. And JOK and Kyle Hamilton are going to be the two tasked, especially on the backsides of this defense at times, with helping disguise looks, helping trying to hopefully confuse a freshman quarterback, but most importantly, to track down nine in that backfield. And I think that's really going to be the key. Speed is the hallmark of what Notre Dame's built on the defensive side of the ball. And I think those two players in particular are going to have to show up and show out. It's no secret. It's got to be best on best in this situation for Notre Dame's defense.
Mike, did you notice Roddy is a big fan of the alternate look, the Blackwatch look that Georgia Tech went with on Saturday? Has he told you about that?
Oh, listen, Roddy's a big fan. I mean, who wouldn't want to look like a combination of Purdue and Army? Boiler up, Roddy.
Come on, man. You guys, just I turned on the TV and I wasn't quite sure if I was watching my alma mater, which you know irks. I mean, it would irk anybody. Wes, to be honest with you though, you're just lucky that this interview didn't happen on Friday, because I don't know if you've seen what happens on Mike's afternoon show on Fridays. Oh, it gets silly.
Gets a little warm in here every once in a while, guys. I don't want to, you know, get too freaky too early. No. This is a family show. I've already come in and done too much, Wes. I'm not going to do this for you. But I've been known to move and shake a little bit. I'm not going to disrobe right now. I know you have.
Crazy. No. We're all good. We are all good. We got, you know,
sure?
What? We pride ourselves here on Packer. No, Mike. No, we pride ourselves on this show. We are news, information, and then entertainment. Okay? News, information.
We've gotten the news and information out already.
A little bit.
So is it time for the entertainment?
Roddy, uh-oh. Don't. No, we got to go. We got to go. Hey, let me ask you a question real quick. Did you ever block your dad on Twitter like Uyunglele has done?
I have not had to block or mute Dad yet. Dad is generally a benevolent retweeter when it comes to Twitter, tends to like most of my tweets. But now that I know that standard's been set by DJ, I've got something in the back pocket in case Dad starts acting up. So this is great. We can always learn.
There you go.
The Golic family, right, though, is the first family of Twitter. Between you, Sydney, Jake, Mama Golic's on there, Dad's on there. Like, you guys may be the first family of Twitter, Mike. I mean, it's pretty legit.
Talking about blocking dads of the world, mom's the one you want to watch out for. If you cross ND mom on Twitter, you've waded into dangerous territory, so everyone be careful.
There you go. All right. Have a good show this afternoon. Good luck on Saturday. Really nice coat, by the way. I really like the satin jackets. It's a nice throwback for the week. Roddy's got
first
a closet
class,
of those from,
you,
like, Sun Bowls.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
All right, take care.
Sunballs.
Mike Golic Jr., Chiney and Golic, afternoons on ESPN Radio and occasionally on the ACC Network. You can see him here. Take care, my man. Be well. You got it. Vote today.
Mike.
Absolutely. When we come back, friends, we will tell you who won wide receiver U. And I'm just going to tell you, it's an upset on Election Day. There is an upset on Election Day in wide receiver U. A precinct in the Commonwealth went to work, Roddy.
Wow.
And they, what do you see this? We're back after this on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
All right, Tuesday, Packer and Durham. Roddy Jones has been here all day for Pack. Mark back tomorrow for show 252, along with Tom Luganbill, who will join us tomorrow, as well as
Is Luke's helping the Democratic process as well? Like, why did he miss, too? Is he helping the Democratic process as well, helping people get registered to vote or whatever he's doing? What's going on there?
Yeah, I'm not. Maybe he's handing out the stickers in the state of North
Carolina.
Yeah,
there you go. Oh, stickers,
we'll
of course.
Check with Luke's tomorrow.
Yeah,
he's handing out stickers. That's Luke's style, right?
He's probably in the Captain America suit handing out the stickers.
That's it. Captain America and handing out the stickers. You got it. See, you've already sorted it out. Speaking of upsets politically, it's part of any electoral process, right? There's the upset. Dewey defeats Truman, that kind of deal, right? Wide receiver U yesterday, and this is in all honesty now, the last cut to make it to wide receiver U in terms of the nominees and the finalists, and I didn't think had a chance to win, ends up winning. You talk about the true political dark horse to win the race yesterday. Tutu Atwell of Louisville with the toe tap, Roddy, on the crossing route. Got 54% of the vote.
Wow. This is a great catch. Don't get me wrong. Fantastic catch. Gets 2 feet in bounds. It's good on Sundays. Wow. I mean, I'm not saying that the electorate is wrong, but let's just say I did not properly measure the electorate and what they were going with here. I mean, there must have been a strong Kentucky contingent. The votes coming in late there.
By the way, it doubled C.J. Lewis of Boston College. And we have the C.J. Lewis catch, kids.
We were standing near each other when this catch happened. You saw my reaction. I mean, this catch was incredible. Just the reaction to go down there, grab. The ball's batted. It doesn't go up in the air. It's going down, and he goes and grabs it. I thought that was the winner for sure. That was my winner.
You're not kidding. I mean, I thought C.J. Lewis was the catch that might make our final top 10 list of catches.
Yeah.
I mean, now Andrew Booth, the one-hand interception against Virginia for Clemson, is a pretty hard standard. But we had Deami Brown, who, by the way, Jarrett Garner great of catch. Duke, also on the finalist list yesterday with Lewis and Atwell.
Yep.
But the bluegrass, the uprising in the bluegrass yesterday at ACC Network on Twitter to vote for Tutu Atwell to win, he doubled the field, lapped the field, did Tutu in winning. Here's the Lewis catch now. And again, may not have won the week, but might be on the finals show. Here you go, Roddy.
It's incredible. I mean, the ball is not batted down. It's batted, and it goes towards the ground. Like, gravity is working hard to get that ball to be an incomplete pass. And C.J. Lewis, the fact that he stays on his feet, too. I mean, this is, like, a play of the type of athleticism that he makes look easy, but if I did that, I'd probably pull 20 different things in my lower leg.
By the way, it was one play after the fake field goal that drew Clemson offside as well.
Yeah. Yeah. What'll forever be known as the Tessitore play.
There you go. So C.J. Lewis is second behind Tutu Atwell, and our congratulations to the Commonwealth of Kentucky for voting early and potentially voting often, for all we know, in this process we have. So very quickly, let's check the ACC Football Players of the Week, too, while we're at it, shall we? And an interesting list here. Sam Howell and Deami Brown set marks. Howell, a career-high passing. Deami Brown, second-best receiving performance in Carolina history. Travis Etienne, of course, becomes the ACC's all-time leading rusher. Jackson Carman, man, I like Brock Hoffman playing the pivot for Virginia Tech, by the way.
Yep.
Dalen Hayes of Notre Dame. Charles Snowden of Virginia, a great week. Shamari Connor had an interception for the Hokies at Louisville. Isaiah Fisher-Smith on special teams. And was there going to be anybody but DJ Uiagalelei to win the quarterback and rookie of the week honors, Roddy?
No.
I don't think so. Right?
No, that was a slam dunk. Congratulations to those guys. I thought Hendon Hooker had a deserving week of being him. He's perfect in the pass game.
Oh, yeah.
And Kyle Hamilton against Georgia Tech. I mean, he didn't have the stats that Shamari Connor did, but Kyle Hamilton against Georgia Tech was fantastic.
We continue our countdown to Notre Dame Clemson, by the way. We got a Waffle House Cup in the Georgia Tech studio.
I'm on the campus of Georgia Tech. You knew this was going to come out at some point. Had to go look for some water, and it came with the Waffle House Cup. So there you go.
By the way, do we need to run any more highlights so you can give us your Mr. Blackwell on the Black Watch jersey Saturday?
Oh, no.
You were not a fan. It was interesting being with you on Saturday. You got less than a minute here.
I was texting some of my buddies about it. Mike got some of it. Like, I just, you turned on the TV, and if you didn't see the Georgia Tech on the side of the helmet or on the field, you thought Notre Dame was playing Purdue or Army. And so while I get the homage to the Black Watch defenses of years past, I was not a huge fan of the way it looked when you turned on the TV. I was not a huge fan.
All right. Even though there goes
but it's an alternate jersey.
Fumble return for a touchdown.
I was a fan of that.
Yeah, it's an alternate. That was, it's the only time you'll see
it. Yeah, which is good. That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
All right. Thank you, Roddy. Appreciate the time as always. You're the man filling in. Pack's back tomorrow with Tom Luganbill, Tim Hasselback. Thanks to Drew, Josh, Meg, Lewis. Great day from all. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 7 on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.